if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 354. This is our 2025 Charles Schwab Challenge plus Soudal Open Tips podcast. The returning Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website, where we have in-depth betting previews for both the Charles Schwab and the Soudal Open. Paul has been busy in the stats lab, pulling together masses of data. We've got Colonial and Rinkven International Golf Club strokes gained rankings, detailed form stats, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for both events this week. All of our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall, no registration. We're available on X. You can follow us. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We're on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available each and every week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Now, I know that I promised last week that if we received a UK review, I would read it out. And we have received many, so thank you. Keep them coming. We have broken through the 200 barrier, so thanks for them. Keep them coming. But this one, when I read it, you'll understand why I've got to read it for this particular show. It's entitled Five Stars Colonial Caddy. Luke Williams here with a big howdy y'all from Funky Town, Fort Worth, Texas, home of the Hawk Ben Hogan. I'm an ex-looper at local clubs and love how you guys feed my golf passion, from picking apart the strokes gained rankings to player preference between Paspalum and Kikuyu. Your research is world class. If we could please get those yapping dogs to stop barking so I can keep up with Steve's heavy breathing patterns and cousin Paul's genius picks. Good luck this week at Colonial. I'll be out there heckling players from the post-it note of doom. I've got to say, that is one of the best reviews we've ever had. Luke Williams from Fort Worth, thank you so much for that one. Brilliant.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, awesome. Luke.
It was troublesome to read. There's, you know, Paspalum, Kikuyu, But the thing about the yapping dogs, that's genius. I just want to make clear to Luke, right, players off the post-it note of doom that are playing this week, just take a note of these, Luke. We've got Emiliano Grillo, who, of course, has won on this Colonial track. We've got Luke List, Patrick Rogers, and Alex Smalley. So if you come across any of those four, pass on my regards.
Alex
pass
Smalley.
Pass on my regards.
I think that Alex Smalley might come back and bite you on the backside at some point, Steve.
I agree. I think he's got a win. I think he does have a win in him.
Yes. Really?
There's some good talent there.
Mm. I saw him get close to the top of the PGA Tour, PGA Championship leaderboard, and then quickly ram it in reverse. I think he's got a habit for that.
Yeah. He's not quite there, but I think at some point there's something coming.
Oh, Luke, while you're at it, pass on my regards to Danny Walker as well. Danny from the Myrtle Beach Classic.
Danny only had one chance with you, Steve. That's harsh.
I know, it is harsh. But it really was. When people are shooting 76s and people are firing in 63s and 64s, it doesn't fill me with enthusiasm.
Mm. Yeah, I get that.
Right, let's quickly talk PGA Championship. A second major for me where I had a big name on the book and at one stage was leading the golf tournament. I thought it was one of the most bizarre major championships I can remember for a long, long time. Let me just take you through these names. Right, we had all of these players with either top T5 or T10 finishes, their first ever major top fives and top tens. Pendrith, JT Poston, Davis Riley and Johnny Vegas, first time they've ever top fived in majors. And then from a top 10 perspective, Ryan Girard, Ben Griffin, Joe Highsmith, Siwoo Kim, unbelievably, his first ever T10 in a major. And of course, Wacky Neiman, first ever T10 in a major. But I don't know what that actually tells you. All of those names finishing in the top fives, top tens, there were not many household names involved.
No.
Not many household names involved at all.
No.
It was a weird old tournament.
The leaderboard after day one was like a John Deere Classic or 3M Open or something, wasn't it? It was nothing like a major or a PGA championship, but yeah, odd one.
You've got to say, congratulations to Scotty Scheffler, his third major. Congratulations if you were on at 5-1. It was easy money, relatively. Mm. The thing that just disappointed me was that Bryson got into position. He was there. The crowd were going. He had the momentum. And then 16 and 17 on Saturday completely derailed him and completely derailed the tournament as a competitive event because whilst he's doing double bogeys and bogeys, Scotty Scheffler's throwing in eagles. I think he was -5 through the last five holes, something like that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got five shots of separation. The tournament's over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame because, as you say, Bryson did hit the front. You see it so often with golfers where there's, you know, sometimes it's a 3-putt on a par 5 or whatever it might be. You miss that 5-footer for par on 16 and then water on the next. And while that's all happening, Scotty's driving the green and suddenly you've got this 5-shot swing in a heartbeat. And as you say, it's game over at that point. From a position where you're looking at the leaderboard thinking, you know, there's a chance here. There's a really good chance here. And in the space of 5 or 10 minutes, it's done. Man. Yeah,
literally.
Mm.
I know you were travelling, Barry. I know you're in beautiful Budapest. But what were your takeouts from the week, from your betting perspective and also just from a kind of just an oversight perspective, just looking at the results and whatever you managed to glean?
My takeouts from the week were a big fat zero, so that wasn't great. But thankfully, Budapest is a bit cheaper than Ireland, so didn't hurt too much. It was interesting to see, like, just to see Bryson get closer and closer as things progressed on, particularly on Saturday. I was like, this is great. Here we go. Myself and the boys, we've locked on. We've picked the right horse here. And I, of course, when I saw Scotty up there, I think it was Friday, started showing his face up towards the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah.
That got worrisome. And I started thinking, do you know what? Maybe we're putting a bit too much credence into needing loads of, you know, a bit of experience at the course. There's not an awful, I guess the evidence shows there's not too many layers of, you know, to that course to unpack. You can approach it without too much depth of experience, unlike other courses. So once he was there and on the back of his recent strokes gained, just, you know, record setting, destruction of everything, he was always just going to be very, very tough to beat for Bryson. But I didn't think Bryson would kind of have those troubles or micro melt that he did. And yeah, once that happened, I mean, Scotty's just super impressive.
Do we think it was a melt, or do we think it was, as Bryson portrayed, just bad luck?
No, you can't be that. What did he say? He was unlucky like a dozen times. I might have picked up that quote wrong, but you can't be that unlucky on that many occasions. There's some things not spot on there, and you kind of need pretty much everything spot on to win a major. The thing is, maybe I don't enjoy Scotty's victories from like an objective perspective as much as I would other players, because he just doesn't feel like he'll give it up. There's no drama. There's not too much drama there when he's doing what he's doing. Whereas other players, there is that drama and it makes it a bit more exciting. Maybe if I backed him for one of these and he won, I'd kind of enjoy it a little bit more, but it just doesn't, Scotty winning doesn't get my blood pumping.
No, I get that. It was, yeah, compared to the finish at the Masters, which was exhilarating, it was, yeah, a different level. But, you know, equally, well, even more so impressive in terms of the manner in which he did it. As you say, Bryson seemed quite a bit down, didn't he, in his interview afterwards. Didn't feel that he got the breaks that he deserved, but five shots in the end doesn't lie. I don't think it does.
No, I don't think it's a lot of breaks.
You can't put that all down to breaks or bad luck. That doesn't work like that over 4 days. So, yeah, well done to Scotty. Another one in the books for him.
I'm just going to run you through the strokes gain breakdown, and then you'll see. Yeah, this all adds a little bit of black and white to the situation. Let's run through Scheffler. Sixth for off the tee. Ninth for approach. Sixth for around the green. Of course, he was first for tee to green. 24th in the field for putting. Yeah. Now, let's compare that to Bryson. Bryson, of course, first off the tee. He was 47th for approach. I mean, that's not bad luck. He was 25th for around the green. He was 22nd for putting, and that equated to 8th for tee to green. If you look at the values, he basically gained half a shot off the tee over Scotty. Scotty then gained 1.2 strokes per round with his approach play. He gained half a stroke per round with his around the green game. And Bryson and Scotty were a 0.07 apart on their putting. So that's the hard stats. Basically, Bryson lost it with his approach
on
play.
Approach.
Yeah.
That's an improvement over the Masters approach performance where
he was hideously negative for approach.
There's a fundamental problem there that obviously is irking him and bugging him, and he did allude to some new equipment, so something's in the works there to address that issue. Mm. It'll be interesting to see if he does figure it out, because if he does, then he's a big problem for the majors. Maybe not so the Open, but that's weather dependent.
He's definitely talking about a new ball that keeps the spin down off the tee.
Mm.
Whether he's looking at clubs and this uniform club length situation for the approach play, don't know.
Mm.
Because I didn't get an awful lot of the coverage, what were the commentators saying about Bryson in terms of his approach play? Because the thing they seem to go with quite a lot is his distance control is out. Was that the case again this week, or was it a little bit of side to side as well?
From eyeballing it, Bryson hits it so far and leaves himself so many wedges that you should be just dancing around the pins from some of the distances that he's hitting it.
Mm.
From the middle of the fairway, you know, yes, okay, he missed some fairways, but, you know, there were an awful lot of kind of 330, 340 yard drives, middle of the fairway, leaving yourself 120, 130, 140. You know, you should be, as a professional, you should be getting a lot of those to within, you know,
15 foot.
Yeah. And inside that barrier, you know, you expect some pros sometimes to knocking it into 2, 3, 4, 6, 8 feet and making the birdies. And that just wasn't happening. And yeah, distance control is probably right. Maybe spin control. There's something just not quite there. And that does come through in those stats, the approach stats that Steve's just read through. So, being the scientist that he is, he'll go back and analyze that and work it through and see where that takes him.
Does not have long to figure it out between now and the US Open.
No, 3 weeks.
These majors are too close together, aren't they?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I wish we went back to... Paul mentioned this last week. I would much prefer the PGA still to be in August.
Yep.
just elongate. You need some, maybe even have, you could even, I mean, it's difficult with the amount of light and whatever, but have something in early autumn, like a September or something. Just elongate these majors out. Because all it does is devalue all of the tournaments in between as well.
Yeah. It's too aggressive. The time frame.
But it's all been done for the FedEx Cup.
It's just
remember ridiculous. That.
Yeah. What are we prioritizing here?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I was just going to throw in here before we move on. Harris English, he went out at 11 a.m. Group 17 on Sunday with Aaron Rye. And before you know it, he's finishing T2 in another major. That is some round from Harris English. Yeah. 6 under, finished T2 at the PGA.
Yeah, that's the way to scythe your way through the field. And what do you earn? $1.5 million or something out of that from effectively one round. That's good going.
Also, nice. Bucket load of world ranking, and more importantly for him, I expect 2025 Ryder Cup points. Let's take you through the rankings. We'll start with Europe. Let's mix it up. McIlroy, Lowry, Rasmus Højgaard, Tyrrell Hatton, who was round two, dancing around the top of the leaderboard, and then literally collapsed. Sepp Strucker at 5, Justin Rose at 6. They're the autos. Then we've got Ludvig Åberg, Tommy Fleetwood, Thomas Dietrich, Niklas Norgaard, Matt Wallace at 11, Laurie Kanter at 12. Americans, Scheffler, Xander, JT. I mean, JT at a major. Paul, you've got to stop me from doing that. You've got to stop me from putting Justin Thomas up at majors.
I'll just send it back to you next time.
Oh, mate. Yeah, when I send it across, I reject. Steve, go and write some other person's name.
Yeah, anyone.
Anyone. Right, 4 Morikawa, 5 DeChambeau, 6 Russell Henley, autos. 7 Novak, 8 McNealy, 9 Harmon, 10 Cantlay. Oh, I'm reading out the wrong one here.
Yes, you are. Here, would I you like the Nosferatus?
I'm going to have to recap all this. Right, McIlroy, so let's do this properly. McIlroy, Lowry, Højgaard, Hatton, Strucker, Rose, Fleetwood, Åberg, Dietrich, Wallace, Norgaard, and Victor Hovland's now crept into the top 12 for Europe. Kanter drops to 14. For the USA, Scheffler, Xander, DeChambeau, JT, Morikawa, Henley, then 7, Harris English has jumped all the way up to 7, McNealy 8, Novak 9, Harmon 10, JJ Spawn 11, and Patrick Cantlay at 12, just outside Berger, Finau, Hoagie, Glover, Bradley. No mention of Jordan Spieth. Max Homer.
Yeah. Work to do, Spieth.
Sam Burns.
Max showed signs of life. That was good.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah. He played well at the Masters as well. So there's something percolating with Max. That second round was outstanding.
It's brilliant. Like just little things like that, little glimpses of light, little cracks in the, you know, the door opening. That'll help. So, you know, fingers crossed. The more Max we get, the better for all of us as golf fans, because he wears his heart in his sleeve. He gives loads to us as golf fans in terms of his openness, which is just brilliant. So, and it'll be fascinating when he does get back for him to tell us a bit more about what was going on. That'll just be a really interesting insight and might give us a bit of a better understanding about what other golfers have gone through when they've kind of hit the, you know, hit the bad patches. So,
yeah,
I'm rooting hard for it.
Yeah, good shout.
I was gutted with JT. I was also gutted with Patrick Reed. Don't know what happened there. But they had a Ryder Cup dinner. Was it either the start of last week or the end of the week before? And of Liv, they only invited Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, who couldn't attend. Patrick Reed was not on the invitation list to go to the Ryder Cup dinner. Now, whether that's literally, kind of just scrambled his mind, but I was expecting far, far better than a terrible missed cut from Patrick Reed.
Yeah, it was disappointing.
Whether that comes and bites us on the bottom in Oakmont when we don't follow him, I don't know. So that was a weird one. But yes, clearly not on Keegan Bradley's must invite to Ryder Cup dinner list. I don't know if that should surprise us. Apologies for reading out the wrong list, but we got there in the end. Right, two tournaments this week. We have the Charles Schwab Challenge on the PGA Tour. And we have the Soudal Open in Belgium. Paul, do you want to run through that?
Yep. Yeah, let's do the Soudal. Actually, it's quite
let's
a nice
Let's mix tournament. It up. Let's change it up. Let's go through the Soudal Open.
Yeah, it's of the smaller tournaments, this is one I think you can get your teeth into. So actually, personally, I think it's the far better betting heat of the two this week. But yeah, the DP World Tour hits Northern Europe for the first time this week. So we've got this three event stretch that takes us here and then to Austria next week to a new course, and then to the Netherlands before the US Open will be on us. And as Barry said, straight into another major championship. Matt Wallace was chalked up as the favourite here. So he's been one of the headlines who's supposed to be playing this week, wasn't he? So got himself a late invite to play Colonial. So all of the bookies put their odds out yesterday, and he was, there were a few that were similar kind of price, but Wallace was favourite or co-favourite and then pulled out of the market. So, and that's a shame because he would have been an interesting one to try and fit into this course, into a staking plan. Given that he played well last week, he talked really well about his game. For him, well, for punters, I guess, it's a shame that he's not. But then we'll see what he does over at Colonial. Anyway, no Matt Wallace. That's left Thomas Peters and Jordan Smith as the joint favourites, 22-1 or thereabouts. Laurie Cantor, 25s. Eugenio Chakara, 28-1. Haotong Lee, 30s in places. Ghost Loughton, Matty Jordan, Keita Nakajima, 33-1, 40-1 bar. So very, very open market this week. The kind of market I like to see, to be fair. Coral and Ladbrook, 7 places each way as standard this week. You've also, as normal, got 8 place options from both Bet365 and Betfred. And again, some good price and place combinations with those two where I've played most of my picks this week, if not all, actually. In terms of the course, we're playing Rincon International over in Antwerp. It's a short 6,940-yard par 71. Only 2 par 5s and only 3 par 3s. So a bit of an odd configuration. Lots of par 4s then, 13 par 4s. I don't think there is a course on the circuit that has more par fours than this one over in Antwerp. Worth your consideration this week, I think, in terms of that particular statistic. It's a Parkland course. It's a composite of the two courses, the north and south over there. Some of them are tree-lined, the holes, and some of them are a little bit more exposed. The greens, well, they're based on Poana, but they overseed them each year with bent grass, and they kind of get this mix of 80% bent with a little bit of Poa, and they play very much as bent grass. So I guess if you were putting them into a particular bracket, then I'd class these as close to bent grass as you're going to get, really. There is some history on the stat sheets as well on the site this week. If you're flicking through, there are 6 events of various types going back to 2010. So in 2010, we had the Telenet Trophy, which was on the Challenge Tour. That was won by Lee Slattery. 2018, 2019, we had the now defunct Belgian Knockout. Those two were won by Guido Migliozzi and Adrian Ategui in those 2 years. And then we've got 3 Soudal Opens from 22 onwards. Sam Horsfield won in 2022 at 22-1. rather. 13 under par was his winning total. 2023 was Simon Forsström, 200-1. He shot 17 under. And then last year, Nacho Alvira won at 100-1 with an 18 under total. So a couple of juicy priced winners over the last couple of years after Horsfield's win back in 2022. In terms of the weather, dry and sunny first couple of days. You've got this chilly northerly breeze that's going to be blowing over the course for the first couple of days. That's going to keep temperatures down to maybe a max of around 15 Celsius. So what's that, 59 Fahrenheit. Saturday looks wet and breezy now. And that's changed overnight, actually, since I wrote my preview yesterday. Looks like there's a little bit of rain coming on Saturday. And then Sunday looks warmer, sunnier, maybe up to 20, 21, something like that. So maybe touching 70 Fahrenheit in the afternoon on Sunday to complete the tournament. It is a short course, though, as I said. Hitting greens, scrambling well, has seemed to work best for the winners here in the past. I think there's some premium on hitting fairways here, but with such a short course, you're not necessarily taking driver on many of the holes, and certainly only with two par fives. So it's more about positional play, I think, and then making sure you find the greens, the right parts of greens, to give yourself a chance and convert some of those birdie opportunities. Par four scoring, as I said, I think if you take a look at that particular statistic and see which players are performing best on par fours, that may give you a clue this week, given there are 13 of them on the course. From a strokes gain perspective, we've got a little bit of stats or a few stats from the most recent events. Strokes gain tee to green, strokes gain approach tended to be the most pertinent stats. I think that's where I'd start my strokes gain analysis starting point this week, if you're that way inclined. What else we got? Current form back to 2018. Each winner here had a top 10 in their last six starts. In fact, four of the five winners had a top 10 in their last four starts. So some kind of incoming form is not a bad starting point either. The only other thing to add, I guess, is that there was US Open qualifying yesterday over at Walton Heath. So lots of this field were in action yesterday and flying directly over to Belgium after yesterday's round was complete. That was won by Jordan Smith. Eight players got through in the end. There's a link to the results in my preview, so you can get a view as to the types of players or which of the players played well yesterday and maybe elated. You know, some of them may be tired. Some players, when they got to a point where they knew they couldn't qualify, would have just withdrawn and jumped on a plane. So there's lots to delve into, lots to pick out of those stats or those results from yesterday. So, well worth a look. I've backed five this week. First two of them were playing and did play well yesterday at Walton Heath, actually. So hopefully they can take a bit of momentum into this week. I'll rattle through my five and then I'll bring you guys in, see if you've got any thoughts on it. The first one, Guido Migliozzi, 45-1. He shot 68-67 yesterday for a 9-under total. That was one off Jordan Smith's winning score. He's twice the price of Jordan Smith. I don't quite get that. I think he should be far closer in the market to Jordan Smith. I think he's, in terms of winning potential, he's got far more chance than Jordan Smith. So 45-1, more than happy to take that. 11 birdies, 2 eagles yesterday. He won the Belgian knockout here in 2019, as I mentioned earlier. Also won the Kenya Open that year. And both the courses there in Nairobi are a good fit for this. They've got some good form lines to that event and this event. So that I like. He was 17th in Turkey last time out. He had three bogey-free rounds during that tournament. And as I say, he's a quality operator in this field and happy to take on the favourites with Guido this week at 45s, which is still available. I was surprised. I thought he would have been backed in quite heavily after that performance yesterday, but seemingly not. So Guido's in. The other one I've backed who played well yesterday, and again, who qualified, is Frederic Lacroix, who is widely available at 50-1 still this morning. Again, he shot 9 under yesterday. And perhaps he can take some inspiration from Martin Kuvre's win over in Turkey before the PGA Championship and potentially strike another blow for the French this week. He won in Denmark last year. That was on another composite Parkland-style course with bent grass greens, another short course as well. So he was a four-stroke winner that week. I think you were on him that week, Steve, from memory.
Second thing, you do get nationalities winning in bunches, don't you? We see this with South Africans, Australians. We've seen it with the French in the past. It just happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you often see when they're celebrating after the event, either directly on the 18th hole or afterwards over a glass of champagne or whatever. Then it can inspire, and I wouldn't be surprised to see someone like Lacroix go well. As I say, on that Denmark event, it was a really impressive four-stroke winner in the end. He was second for strokes gained tee to green, which is a good stat for this week as well. Not brilliant this year. 13th in India was his best result of the year, but 24th in Turkey last time out. He closed with a 63, which is the best round of the day. And he's got a little bit of form here, 33rd and 34th from his last two attempts, but he was sixth after day one in 2023, and he was 11th going into the weekend last year. So perhaps Frederick can improve on that this week. Similar kind of price point, Brandon Robinson-Thompson I've backed 50-1. That was with the 8th place option with Betfred. There's 55s out there if you want to take the bog standard terms. I backed him in Kenya. That was on a comparable track. He finished 41st, but I'll keep the faith because I think this is kind of where he's going to get his breakthrough. This kind of course suits him best, in my view. 8th in Bahrain, 3rd in Qatar, 7th at Joburg Open, 4th last time out in Turkey. So he's getting closer and closer, often starts fast as well. And his form tends to come in patches if you look back through his history. So given that he was fourth last time out in Turkey, perhaps he'll contend again here this week. And then two slightly longer chances this week to finish. John Parry, I backed at 70-1 with Betfred again. There's a little bit 80s out there right now if you take the standard terms, but I've gone the 8th place option. Fourth in the race to Dubai still, John Parry, so he's got a great chance of taking one of those PGA Tour cards if he can push on from here. Missed cut last week at Quail Hollow on his PGA Championship debut. That's never going to be a great fit. 7,600 plus yard, par 72. This is a much better fit, I think. One in Mauritius before Christmas, second in Kenya. Again, a good fit for this course. Unlucky he ran into Jacques Kruijswijk that week, who was outstanding. Otherwise, he could have won that as well. 33rd in Turkey last time out. That was after 6 weeks off. 4th for strokes gained approach, which is encouraging. So I think he can push on from there and potentially contend this week. And the final one is Jakob Skov-Olesen, who I backed to stay 75-1 with 8 places. He has been nibbled in, but there's still 70s or thereabouts available out there right now. Talented young rookie, and I think another one who could be inspired by Martin Kuvra's victory over in Turkey. He's from Denmark, but he won last year's amateur championship, has won in Belgium as an amateur in the past. Now, that win at the amateur championship last year got him a spot in the Open Championship. He did make the cut there. He also had spots at this year's Masters and US Open, and he decided to forfeit both of them so that he could turn professional. So that's a bold move when you've got Augusta and the US Open sitting there ready to be played and choosing not to. So I think he fancies his chances of pushing on and making a breakthrough at this level and qualifying for some of these big events in the very near future off his own back. So, one to watch, I think. As I say, one in Belgium as an amateur, 9th in Mauritius, 13th in Kenya, 7th at Joburg Open, 8th in China, 12th in Turkey last time out. He's been knocking on the door of those top 10 finishes and potentially could improve on that this week. And I think he could go well, Jakob. So Jakob Skov-Olesen, John Parry, Brandon Robinson-Thompson, Frederick Lacroix and Guido Migliozzi. Bit of a mouthful by five this week, but that's where I'm pitching my team. Barry, any fancies from you in Belgium?
I'm glad it was you doing the Sudal and not Steve.
Oh, mate, can you imagine?
Pronunciations.
Well, I've got to try and pronounce picks. A name here that I'm dreading, but you go, you continue.
Fantastic. I've not done too much research or digging into this yet. I like the lacrosse out there, Paul. I think I'll follow that in blindly. Trust all of your great work, as always. Just a question then. For both of you, if you were in Jakob Skov-Olsen's situation and you had your amateur status and you'd qualified to play the Masters and the US Open, had you remained an amateur for just a few more months, what would you do? I mean, I know it's just a hypothetical and there's way more things going on in his life than we could imagine, but just thoughts on it.
It's a tough one, isn't it? You know, he went through Q school to get his card, and at that point, the decision's got to be made one way or the other. You know, is he going to turn professional, take the card, earn some money, or what is it, wait 3, 4 months, 5 months, or whatever it would have been, play the Masters, potentially go after the Masters if he's not so bothered about the US Open. Hmm. Would he get another chance? You've got to fancy that he thinks he's talented enough to get plenty of opportunities to play Augusta further down the line.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Shows confidence, doesn't it?
Mm. That is. It shows supreme confidence. Yeah, personally, could I have turned down the opportunity to play it? Probably not. But then I've not got the talent in... he's got more talent in his little toe than I've got in my golf ability. So I'm sure he knows better than I do. Interesting question, Steve, man.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, there's so many factors. I think I'd like to... I don't think making a decision to remain amateur would make you think or take away any of your confidence in believing you will get there eventually anyway.
Hmm.
I just think it's cool to just give you have those experiences, you know, lined up to do or to be able to go to them and to turn them down. I don't know. It's a hard one.
Yeah,
I think ultimately I'd do them. I'd hang on a few months. It's only 3 or 4 months. I know at 25 years old, you're screaming to get on with life and things to happen, but like 3 or 4 months it's a long time, but it's also a very short time. Just pause for a little while. And if you're that good, go play them and then just like rip off a few events. Go win an event after, you know, turn pro after the US Open. Go win a quick one on the European Tour, the DP World Tour, and then have your card that way.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting dilemma. He must have pondered over it for some time.
You mentioned the Kenyan Open's a very good fit.
Mm.
I'm looking at a player's profile here. He's finished 5th, 11th and 1 there across his last five visits to the magical Kenya Open. So that's quite a good fit. And I'm just floating through his European form, and he had a 7th at Valderrama a couple of years ago.
Yep.
So he clearly likes these tree-lined, sort of claustrophobic kind of setups.
Yep.
And then you mentioned the US Open qualification. He shot 7 under there. Jacques Kruijswijk, is it?
Close enough, Steve, yeah. Yeah. Jacques Kruijswijk.
70-1.
Yeah.
Seems like a very good price for a guy that won a few outings ago in South Africa on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
And his recent form reads, first in the Kenyan Open, 37th in the South African Open, second at Joburg Open, second at the Southern Africa Tour Championship. Mm. And then he's shaken the rust off after that was till the 30th of March. He's come to Turkey, missed the cut. So shaken the rust off. Could go well, in my opinion. Jacques Kruijswijk.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And he's one of these that's chasing this PGA Tour dream.
Well, yeah, and the you know, with one win already under his belt this season, you know, you get a second one and you'd like to fancy that he's going to be in pole position. You know, he should be there or thereabouts to the bitter end,
well, yeah,
with a great chance of it.
He's currently in between Keita Nakajima in 12th and Marco Penge in 10th on the race to Dubai. I just thought 70-1. Mm. I wasn't expecting to see his name that low.
Yep.
No, so, yeah, Jacques Kruijswijk I'm going to go for.
No, good shout.
And let's follow you in on Lacroix. I mean, what can go wrong, eh? Backing a Frenchman across the podcast. What could possibly go wrong?
Who was the other one you were on recently? Hugo Cousseau. Is there a reason he hasn't just like repopped, or, you know, he fell off the list, Paul?
Just, you can't back them all. And I've got to be honest.
I know.
Steve's pick on Kruijswijk was one of the ones that was, you know, last dish off my list. Yeah, I don't know. I was quite happy with the five that I've got and kind of wanted to call it a day there at that point. To be honest, if Matt Wallace had been playing, I'd have been hard-pressed not to put him up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, whether the course was, you know, entirely suitable or not, but he played well last week. And Matt's another one who wears his heart on his sleeve in terms of how his game is. And he was really, really positive on social media afterwards about the state of his game, how he's improving. You know, he'll have his eye very much on trying to qualify for a Ryder Cup spot. Yeah, and
be feisty with him in a New Yorker and a New York crowd. Yeah,
I'd love to see him play one. I really would.
Mm. Okay,
that's the kind of guy you want in the team. Mm. In my opinion, yeah. True.
Yeah,
I think that'll bring the best out of Matt Wallace.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm not sure you'd say the same about Aaron Rye.
Put Wallace and Ram together in four balls and just let like explosions happen.
Fireworks, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, it's going to be very, very difficult to win the Ryder Cup in New York around Bethpage. Although I can't say the American team's particularly scary right now when you look at some of the names. But putting a Matt Wallace in there as a kind of joker in the pack. Yeah, and like you say, putting him with a Rahm or someone with real experience saying, right, go out there and just go for it. I think that'd be great.
That'd be one hell of a partnership, wouldn't it, with Rahm? I sincerely hope he makes one, so yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is I can't remember a qualification that's so open on both sides.
Yeah.
So it's exciting stuff, and we're not a million miles away now, coming to the end of May. If you're listening to this podcast on YouTube, we would love to hit 125 likes this week. Plus, with the Memorial Tournament next week and the US Open from Oakmont just around the corner, subscribe to the channel and make sure your show notifications are on so you know the second our pods drop over the next few weeks. 5,000 subscriber mark is very close. So if you are listening on YouTube, please press that subscribe button and join us. Right, over to the PGA Tour. The aptly named, love it, Charles Schwab Challenge. Just rolls off the tongue. Not the best of fields, as you would expect. It's not a totally dismal field, Colonial. I would say of the four tournaments in Texas, Houston, Valero, the Byron, and this. I reckon this one holds probably the highest regard amongst the golfing community. It's a beautiful par 70 Colonial Country Club. Classical in its design. Always plays tough. I've categorised it this week as technical. Medium in length. They've added some length to it over the years. It's now a 7,289-yard par 70. We've got a slight change in grasses this week. We've got the standard Bermuda grass, fairways and rough, 2.5 inches in length. The greens, though, small, 5,000 square feet. And it is 007XL bent grass. Not many podcasts where you can say stuff like that, but 007XL bent grass we're playing on this week.
It's like Steve's burger order.
I do like a Big Mac, it has to be said, although they're not as big as they used to be. Fairway widths, 25 to 30 yards at 300 yards, which is interesting because last week at Quail Hollow, they were 28 to 30 at 300. So it's a shorter golf course with fairways that are pretty much on par with what we saw at Quail. Quail was a 7,600-yard par 71. This is a 7,289 par 70. I do keep reading interviews here, though, that say that driving distance, and those that can hit the ball a long way and straightish do have an advantage around Colonial compared to how it used to be in the days of Zach Johnson and Steve Stricker winning here. Now, this did have a renovation last year. I don't know if you can remember. Gil Hance has done his amazing work on this property. And the one thing that definitely happened last year was that these greens rejected approach shots. We're 12 months down the line. So those bent grass greens will have had a chance to settle down. But I don't think a year is going to fully get these greens to a point where they're not at least releasing. And just looking at the local weather around here, it's been pretty dry in Fort Worth over the last couple of months. So a lot of the moisture you will see on this course is moisture that the course superintendent and the PGA Tour have told him to actually lay on the course. If they let this course play as the natural precipitation would allow, I think this is going to be quite a tough test this week. I reckon firm fairways, running fairways, and knowing the PGA Tour, I think we're going to see releasing greens at least over the weekend. Well, I'm hoping. Mm. I'm hoping they're not getting the Fort Worth local fire brigade out. Quite a lot of wind over the weekend. That's one thing I will say. So whether they're going to go, oh, we can't have these players playing on fast greens in the wind. But it's not crazily Texas wind. We're looking at gusts up to 20 Friday afternoon. We're looking at gusts to 25 on Saturday. And it's calming actually on Sunday, sort of 15 to 20. I think, again, could have a single digit winner of this. I tell you what, if I was playing and someone offered me 11, 12 under par, standing on the first tee on Thursday, I'd snap their hand off. I think that's the target. Mm. If you can get the double digits, I reckon you're going to be at least in the each way money. Anything else from you two around Colonial? The field? Hogan's Alley.
Yeah, no, I think you've summarised it all there. Yes, another tricky test, which some of the players who are in the field who played last week and played well might be more suitable to it, simply because in that kind of more grinding mindset than going out and making copious amounts of birdies. We shall see.
We've only seen this format once last year. Davis Riley, I was on Scotty Scheffler. He gained 3.66 strokes off the tee, 7.87 strokes on approach. He was negative around the greens. His chip-ins at... I had to laugh. I tipped up Davis Riley for the Myrtle Beach Classic and he misses the cut. And then he turns up at a PGA Championship at Quail Hollow and finishes in the top. It's just, golf betting is ludicrous at times, mate. There's no rhyme or reason to any of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely none whatsoever.
There were some random names.
It is random at points. We keep preaching it, or I preach it. He loves southern golf courses, hence he won here, but that was just so random. He was slightly negative around the greens, but basically he gained 11.4 strokes tee to green, and he made six with the putter. So looking at that split, 57% tee to green, 43% with the putter. Again, I don't think you're going to do particularly well this week if you are not at least gaining half a stroke per round with the putter. Ideally, you'd need to be better than that. So team no putt, don't think you're going to win. What's happening with Will Zalatoris at the moment? I've never seen a golfer that actually WDs for more tournaments on the PGA Tour than Will Zalatoris. I see he was at it again last night.
Yeah, he can't be quite right, can he? Whether he's having some issues again with that back there's something that's niggling at him by the looks of it.
Mm.
Right, I am the black sheep this week. I do appreciate that. I haven't been on any social media at all since I posted my tips because I know what I'm going to get on there. But I've tipped up Scotty Scheffler this week. 8 points, enhanced win only. 13-5 with Bet365. It's complete silence.
I think the dead air is the perfect response. Like, what a sexy pick, Steve.
I'm getting to the stage where how do you deal with these tournaments when you've got someone that's clearly better than the whole field by a country mile? And I'm just going to read out his finishes in Texas since, now how far do I go back? Well, he won the World Match Play in 2022. That was his first win in Texas. But since the 22 Charles swap, so here in 22, he's finished 2nd, 9th, 4th, 5th, 3rd, 2nd, 2nd, 2nd and 1st in Texas. So it's not as if he turns up at these events and can't be bothered. And then you could say, well, he won a major last week. You know, he's going to be tired. He's not bothered. Well, okay, get that. But then he's staying in his own house with Meredith and the kids. He's in his own bed, you know, how, you know, the old PGA Tour pros always come out of that. And, you know, he can save and re-energise all of his energy. He's at home, local to the course. Him and his dad used to come and watch this pretty much every year. His dad, Scott Scheffler, who I found it funny that Rich Beam said that, was it Rich Beam or was it Radar? I think Radar was saying, oh, Scotty Scheffler's dad's following me around the course this afternoon and he's watching this from behind a tree on every hole. It must be great. And your father of the world number one who's literally crucifying everyone at golf at the moment and you're still standing there with your knees knocking, barely being able to watch one shot that your son's taking. Mm. I thought that was quite an interesting angle. But yes, This tournament is dear to their heart. The Byron Nelson was dear to their heart, and they've won that. So they've now won two of the Texas events. I think if you actually sat down with Scotty, he'd say, "Yeah, I'd really want to win Colonial. It's one that's on the motivational list." So yeah, I just thought, what can you do? Because you could put all of these hours of work into this and find all of these fantastic longer shots and bigger prices and Scotty Scheffler wins by six. And you're like, what was the point?
And he set precedent as well by winning the Heritage after the Masters.
Great point. And that was against a signature event level field the week after winning the Masters. He was the last guy to have done that, and I've put that in my tip commentary, was Bernhard Langer in 1985. Wins the Masters, wins at Harbortown the week after. So that shows you the mental resolve and the motivation of this guy, Scotty Scheffler. He's on a different level. So anyway, I'm on. The other thing that kind of swung it for me is he's 3-1 with a lot of firms for the US Open in a couple of weeks' time. So, and I'm seeing him at 5-2 this week to win this.
Yeah. Oh, wait, the field's not even a fraction of what that US Open field's going to be like. So, yeah, I get that.
Yeah. I'm on.
He can't even get excited about it, but it's just like, oh, God, sigh. Oh, fine, I have to put it on. Okay.
Oh, believe me, I don't want to. Yeah, but what options have you got? You either completely ignore him.
Exactly.
I don't know, and this is it, and Paul mentioned this. In a way, betting on the PGA Tour is becoming more and more difficult because you've got so many of these signature events where you've got a short field with the best players, and then sometimes you get tournaments like this where you've clearly got the best player in the world against a gibberoni field. Relatively, it's very unbalanced, the PGA Tour these days, to Bell.
Yeah.
Where the Sudal Open, you've got a field; they're all relatively evenly spaced out, and you can pick your lane. It's difficult on the PGA Tour at the moment.
It's kind of getting to the Tiger days where you'd pick out the without Tiger market from the outset and just be done with it, just to take it out of the equation. And, you know, we'll, without Scotty, become the regular market moving forward if he carries on dominating. And, you know, he is so dominant. I know there's failings with the world rankings, but you look how far ahead he is of Rory with the world rankings, and then Rory of the rest of the field, or rest of the contingent out there. He's just scarily good, and he deserves to be a very, very short price favourite as he is this week. Mm. He could just mop up. You could just be right. Just take the win and away you go.
Where does it end? That's the trouble. I mean, he's got it's Memorial next week, which he won last year.
He's won 10 of his last 26 events. So, I don't know the maths, but somewhere around, what, 3.5, 4 to 1? You just blind back him every week. It's an astonishing pace of winning.
He's won 10 of his last 26, you're right. That's a 38% success rate. That starts with the 2024 Arnold Palmer Invitational. Plus, within that set of 26, he's also finished T2 in 3 more. It's just madness.
It's not like he's missing the cut when he doesn't win either. You know? So it's absolutely incredible.
I was never into golf betting when Tiger was absolutely at his pomp. So I know Paul was. I wasn't. I came into this quite late, say 2008, 2009. So I don't really know how you compare Scotty to Tiger, because I wasn't really involved week to week in golf back then. But I've never seen anything like Scotty Scheffler. You just haven't. He's when he's playing at his best, he's just on a different level. And as Paul said, and this is said with the greatest of respect, and I think it's the ultimate. It's the same with F1 when you go back on Michael Schumacher and Seb Vettel when he was in his prime, and Lewis Hamilton. You turn up and watch a Grand Prix back then, it's like, well, we know what the result's going to be, and it's a bit boring.
Mm.
Well, it gets. Yeah. I mean, it was boring watching Scotty Scheffler mop up at the PGA Championship. There was just never any doubt.
How can you compete with that? As another player, like mentally, just going, God, Scotty's there. Damn it. Like, I wish he was like 7 shots away. And, you know, the thing he did on Saturday where he finished the last 5 holes and 5 under, that was it. He just said, this is my tournament. Oh. That was the moment.
Yeah. Right, my next chance selection is 40-1. So where are you two chiming in? Paul, where are you chiming in?
I've only about 2. I've got one at 55s and one at 500-1.
500?
Nice.
Wow. Barry?
Yeah. Oh, God, I feel highly deficient as a gambler now that I don't have a 500-1. I am looking at Harry Hall.
Yeah.
Haven't put the bets on, just pulling together a couple of names at the moment. A third here 2 years ago, nice week last week. So looking for those two to merge. And he's somewhere in the mid-50s and 60s. So that's one. And then Chris Goddard has had a few nice tournaments in a row. 18th, 12th, 15th, 13th. And he does have a missed cut here last year. But I can get over that based on the current form.
He's ripping it up, Gotterup, very, very high across all of my strokes game metrics over the last 8 weeks. So, yeah, he's actually tied for 12th strokes game current form. So he's playing really well.
That'll work lovely. And then one other who has had a couple of top 10s in his last 3 outings is Matthias Schmidt. Again, missed cut here last year, so kind of need to overcome that. But I like the current form.
I thought you might mention one of mine, but we'll go through that in a while.
I might stay with him one more week, but I'm not going to say anything more. Leave the surprise for you to break.
If you've ever had a guy that's finished in a stressless second place in a major than Harris English, I'd love to talk to them. Because that guy had absolutely no stress last week. As we said, went out at 11 something Sunday morning, had the round of his life, actually finished second for tee to green across the whole week at Quail Hollow. And as we mentioned, once I actually found the right set of Ryder Cup standings, he's sitting seventh for qualification. And I remember English back in 21. He did something very similar in 21. He got into the Ryder Cup team the last time the Ryder Cup was played in America. He won early that year. He won the Century Tournament of Champions in January. And then he finished third at the US Open. They played at Torrey Pines that John Rahm won. And they were all moaning, "We've all got to get on a plane. We've all got to fly over to the Travelers in Connecticut." And he went over there and he then won the Travelers Championship the week after. And that pretty much solidified his spot in the team. He was always going to get picked in. Difficult to get rid of a player that's won twice on the PGA Tour. You look at this year, one early, one in January, one at Torrey Pines, big boys golf course. He then gets this completely stressless T2 last week at the PGA Championship, his best ever major finish. And he's got a decent record here at Colonial. He's got a couple of top tens. I love course correlations. Don't know why, but Copperhead works here beautifully. You can understand why claustrophobic, relatively sort of, that's medium in length. Bay Hill works here. Sedgefield Country Club works here. Also, players that have got a top 10 finish here previous to winning works. I mean, Kevin Na, Jason Kokrag, Emiliano Grillo and Davis Riley all had finished in the top 10 and then win here on a latter visit. So English just ticks so many boxes for me this week. And from Paul's data lab, go to our strokes gain rankings. He sits fourth across Colonial all-time strokes gained. He sits behind only Davis Riley, Jordan Spieth and Scottie Scheffler. If you look at strokes gained total per round around here. So I thought 40 to 1 with Betfred, 8 places each way. I went 2 points each way on Harris English. Paul, your 55 to 1 chance, please.
Is Brian Harman, who... 55 to 1 with the standard price is 45 to 1 if you want him with 8 places. But I thought in this field, if there's a player that could potentially beat Scotty if he's, for whatever reason, not on his game, then someone like Brian Harman could be that person. He won the Texas Open back in April, as we know. Third at Harbour Town since then. 60th last week at Quail. This is far more suitable for Brian Harman than a long Quail Hollow. So I've got
done well to make the cut.
Indeed, yeah, absolutely. You talk about top tens here. He's got three of them here at Colonial. 24th last year, was seventh to halfway. As I say, I think if there's a player who's got that in the locker, in the mental locker, that is capable of beating the world's best from his Open Championship success, then Brian Harman potentially could be that one. So, yeah, taking him each way. See what
I'm going to ask you two a question. Is this the week that Daniel Berger wins?
Oh, I don't know. He was popular again last week, wasn't he? I know you've been on him quite a lot. We'll see. We'll see. It's going to take a hell of an effort for anyone to beat Scotty, but...
Do you know what? I think you have Berger blindness, Steve. I mean, this guy should be on your post-it note of doom at this stage.
There's so many people. There's so many people listening to this tutting at you, Barry.
You do have Berger blindness.
How can you say that about Daniel Berger? People are going, but he's popping in my model. He's been number one in my model for the last 3 consecutive months. How can you say that, Barry?
Yeah, number one in the model, but like, where's the trophy?
Doesn't win a lot, does he?
Talented, doesn't win anywhere near enough for the talent level. I mean, and he's been popping in models all over the place recently, Steve, but like nothing, just disappointment.
It's funny you should say that. I mean, we look at these prices and you think, I'm just looking at Sky Bet. Sky Bet have got Tommy Fleetwood at 18-1. Tommy Fleetwood, who has never won in the United States, is their second favourite at 18-1. And then you've got Harris English that's won this year, won 5 times on the PGA Tour, 33-1, and just finished second at the US Open. I just QE'd it. I don't get it. I'll take 40s on Harris English.
Yeah.
These strokes game models feed so much into these. What about Jordan Spieth then, Barry? I've been following him. I haven't got a cent on him this week, mate. Is this the week?
Where is he? I think I saw him in your strokes gained rankings overall recently. He's like fourth? Strokes gained total? No, tied fourth, yeah. So he's playing as well as Harris English according to this strokes gained model.
Yeah.
Is this the course for Jordan?
Well, he's won here. Holds it dear, lives in Dallas. Spieth's going to win a tournament, it isn't the Memorial next week when everybody goes. No. If you actually look at the wins that he has had recently, it's in second division tournaments.
Mm.
When the big boys turn up, Jordan doesn't tend to come to play anymore. But on a field that he knows that he can beat up or be competitive in, that's when he pops up. He's a danger this week, Jordan.
Is it the courses with that additional bit of length required to kind of trip him up as well? Mm. A little bit? I don't know.
More like JT.
A little bit. Maybe I need to kind of lose not the love for Spieth, but just any kind of betting affinity. It's probably just saving money and just enjoy it. He's just so fascinating to watch when he's in the hunt and you're listening to the conversations and him talking it out. It's an interesting watch as a fan.
Now we've said off. I mean, we've been saying recently. Let's go back to brass tacks, and I'm trying to change a lot of the way that I work. Now this guy, I know that you've been very sweet on him this season, Barry. And when you just look at where this guy plays well, and, he made the cut last week, like Brian Harman, but Bud Cawley is not going to do well on a 7,600-yard par 71. When he plays well on shorter, classical tree-line golf courses in the main. And I just thought 75-1 about Bud Cawley. I had that with Bet365, 8 plays each way. That's the kind of bet I like. So a point each way. He was my final selection this week on Bud. He goes well in Texas. 21, what we got here? He's finished. He's had 3 top 5, 6 top 10 and 11 top 21 finishes in Texas across his 24 times he's competed here on the PGA Tour. So he loves the state. Likes these shorter courses. And as we know with Bud, started the year on a major medical. He's had an absolute... He's gone through agony and pain in equal amounts. But 6th at the Players, 4th at the Valspar. I believe you on that week. 5th at the Valero Texas Open, the last time they were in Texas. I just think Bud Cawley might just pop back towards the top of the leaderboard this week after sort of not being there for a month or so. And a lot of the reason he hasn't been on the leaderboard, he just hasn't played a great deal. It's like he bagged all of this money, bagged all of these points, bagged his PGA Tour future, and just, I'm going to just, he played the RBC, played okay, and he's back again. I just thought Bud Cawley at 75-1 is the sort that might just pop up this week. What do you think, Barry?
I think probably I'll trust you on the course fit a lot more than I trust myself on my pick for him last week. So, yeah, that's the thing that got me is he can bash the ball out there. His driving distance is quite high, but I guess it just doesn't merge with what kind of courses he tends to really fire on. So,
yeah, well, it might be the length of the irons or something like that. Maybe he likes more wedges in rather than you're not going to get that at Quail. It's all mid to long irons. It's this kind of mixture, isn't it?
Yeah, good shout. I think I'll stick with him one more week. Has anybody noticed something funky going on here? I'm just looking at Betfair Sportsbook right now. They're 8 places, 10 places, 12 places market. There are a lot of players with the same price for all of these. So looking at Cawley here, he's 66-1, 6 places, their regular outright market. He's 50-1, 8 places, 150 odds, 50-1, 10 places, 150 odds, and 50-1, 12 places, 150 odds.
I think I'll take the 12, Baron.
Thanks, Paul, yeah. Captain Obvious. I think something's broken, but I think I will take the 12 places.
Yeah. Grab the 12 quick before it changes.
And I could just top up on the Betfair outright. No, why would I do that? Scotty's going to win, so I'll just take the 12 places to place the finishing second by 16 shots to Scotty Scheffler this week.
Take the place, money, and run.
I'm not sure. I mean, I've never come across Betfair doing it before, so it might be a first week thing.
It looks like they've changed it. There's a Rupert Murdoch bet as well has the same problem with their market, so they must be getting the same pricing structure from somewhere. But there's a lot of players are messed up here and their prices across those three different markets.
Interesting.
I'm on Scheffler, English, Cawley. 500-1 shot for Paul. I'm just scanning. You know, I like to guess these things up front. Oh, don't tell me what, please. Oh, I know who you've gone for. I reckon you've gone for Hayden Buckley.
Hayden Buckley opened at 600-1 yesterday.
And I'm right. You've got to say I'm good being able to guess who Paul has gone for.
Yeah.
Hayden Buckley.
He was 400-1 with extended places yesterday. 600-1 with bog standard. Still 500-1 out there right now. 7th last time out at Myrtle Beach. And coming into this last year, his incoming form was miscut, 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 miscut. 52nd, 59th. And then he finished 5th here last year. He gained over 6 strokes with a putter that week. And given the price that's been dangled out there, is Lightning going to strike twice? Probably not. Is he going to beat Scotty? Well, that would be a hell of an ask, but could he just get an each-way place at that kind of price? Well, he's done it once. Who knows? So, yeah, Hayden Buckley.
Who did you go with for your bet?
I did that early with Betfred. So, yeah, they were...
You're getting 8 places?
They were 400-1 with 8 places. I also took a little bit of the 600-1 they were doing with 6 just to... just out of curiosity.
Just out of curiosity on where I will be going for my exotic summer holiday this year.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't resist. You know, you're looking at it and go, well, 400-1 with 8 places is fantastic, but 600-1 with 6, wow. So, I couldn't quite decide, so I took both.
Let's top up to a blend of prices and places for 8 points each way on Buckley.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Classic.
Good value to loser there. But we'll see.
Is that us?
Yeah, all done. Yeah, all good.
You happy, Barry?
I'll be happy if I can figure out how to win a bet this week. Last week kind of put a dent in the confidence. Anyway, yeah. I think we'll just write it off as an anomaly week.
We weren't a million miles away, Bryce, and he just cocked up a couple of holes.
Yeah, post-it note them, will we? Temporary post-it note for the week.
I'm going to take away from today's podcast, chaps, Daniel Berger. Do I add him to the post-it note of doom after he wins this week? Barry, that could be an interesting podcast next week.
Look forward to it.
It could be, couldn't it? Well, I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Best luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Hope your bets go well, listeners. Next week, the Memorial Tournament, one of the top tournaments on the PGA Tour, Jack's Place, Jack Nicklaus's tournament. Paul, what have you got?
We've got the return of the Austrian Open next week.
That's right.
Playing on a course that was last played in 1992. So that's going to take some digging. But yes.
When Mark McNulty was playing and people of that ilk.
Yes, I'm not sure there's going to be anyone in the field who's got any course for.
No.
Put it that way.
But you'll be in your data lab going through everybody to try and find one.
Mm.
I hope your bets go well, listeners, and all of your draft teams and all of that malarkey. We'll be back next week. See you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. Because it's the Golf Betting System, the Golf Betting System.